Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Happy spring, everyone. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love.
Hello, Sherry.
And today we are going to stay close to my roots. And our special guest today is Councilwoman Mika Owens. Mika is the chairwoman of the Climate, Environment, and Infrastructure Committee, and she spearheaded the Green Cincinnati Plan. It was kind of the first thing this council did out of the gate. It was time to update it, but she took the lead on it. She cares about the climate and environment, so something close to the mayor's heart. And so we're 3 years in now.
Can you believe that?
No, Burl, I can't. And so I just, I thought it would be a good time to have her in. And so we'll welcome Mika as our special guest.
That'll be great. Now, Sherry, why did we pick Mika out of 9 council members?
I think, did you bump into her?
I think I did, or I just, her name comes up.
It does. She was the number 2 vote getter.
And if you went out on the street and asked people, kind of like in the spirit of jaywalking, can you name 3 members of city council? I think because this is sort of a more quiet city council than we've had in a while, people would have a hard time doing that. But if they came up with any name at all, it would be Mika Owens.
Agree. And you know how we know this? We start judging by the headlines, because the best kind of headline to write out of council if somebody's doing something is last name colon whatever they're doing. And for a little bit, my boss Carl would be like, no. And we'd either have to include a full name, which there's only so many characters in a headline,
right?
Or we kind of have to veer off into like what the thing was. And so we're really starting to get to know the council members, and we've had some headlines where just Owens says, does whatever. We're starting to reach the point.
It has enough recognition.
Knowledge. Yep.
And in our terms, the way we work, it has enough search engine optimization credit so that, when people start searching for your name, in Google, as a city council member, you've arrived. So anyway, so it'll be fun getting to know Mika Owens a little bit, the person behind the office. What's in the news this week, Sherry?
As most of you do know, I'm married to Alex Coolidge. He covers business for The Inquirer. And, a large part of what he's been doing these days is covering the potential Kroger merger with Albertsons. There's nothing I don't know about it. And don't worry, I'm not going to bore you with those details now. At some point, we might have him on.
We should
It's a very important issue and everything, but there's like lawsuits and there's all kinds of antitrust.
Well, and most recently, this is what we were going to talk about, but Kroger is done playing the victim here.
Yes, that's true.
Having everybody scream, antitrust and monopoly and all of that. And, those are valid concerns when you consolidate the corporate ownership of grocery stores, which is what this would do in a big way. They don't feel that the regulators are taking into consideration that their competition isn't just grocery stores. It's
Amazon.
It's Walmart. It's Target. The landscape of how we get our food has changed so much that they have actually clawed back with a lawsuit. So this is far from over, the Kroger Albertsons merger. Big news here, since that's where Kroger is headquartered.
In the midst of it all, we have news of another grocery store that, any if you've been south, you know what I'm about to say.
Piggly Wiggly.
No, but all right, that was a good guess.
I love me some Piggly Wiggly.
Publix is moving into Northern Kentucky. And so they had previously announced, they confirmed plans, they're building near Triple Crown Shopping Center. So they're like, okay, we're coming there. And then just this week, we heard the second location in Cold Spring in Northern Campbell County. And if you have ever shopped at a Publix, you're intrigued. You're intrigued. I mean, the very first time I heard about it, I'm not the grocery shopper in our house. Alex does it for market research, but he's also the cook and likes, and he enjoys cooking and doing all of that. When I first heard about it, I was like, how far is Triple Crown from where the Coolidges live?
And how far is it?
not really grocery shopping distance, but enough to go and at least one or two times
check it out.
Pub sub.
Yes. Producer Phil, that was the first thing he said. Get me a pub sub.
The Coolidges used to live in Fort Myers, Florida, a long time ago. That was our grocery store.
Right.
I just remember loving all of that. And then it kind of became a thing because I lived there so long ago. It wasn't really like social media and everything online wasn't really yet a thing. But since that's grown to be a thing on social media, and then I'll see it and I'll be like, oh, yeah.
Well, it is big news. It's not often that in this market we have a lot of competition for grocery like in other places I've lived. You know, when I was in Northern Virginia, D.C., there were probably five or six easy different...
Home of Winn-Dixie's, right?
Well, not Winn-Dixie's, but you have, you know, which one that's owned by Kroger, and I'm blanking on it now, but you just have, you know, depending on what neighborhood you are in, there's three or four different types of grocery stores that you see. And in some markets like this, they tend to be dominated by one, and ours happens to be Kroger. So Harris Teeter is the one I'm thinking of. And I loved me some Harris Teeter because, you know, being part of Kroger's empire, I could go in and buy Grater's ice cream in Northern Virginia from the Harris Teeter. So, yeah.
I will say I'm an Aldi's girl.
Like
I have to get some sort of groceries or whatever, I like the smaller footprint of an Aldi's. And then Aldi's has something called Isle of Shame, in which they just have, this is a huge thing.
I know. And I just, like, and I just learned, I just learned about it not too long ago.
Where they just have,
what is it, the
like
aisle two
things.
Or whatever? Or
it's kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
And so I will take that opportunity to go to Aldi's.
A serendipitous shopping experience. You never know what you're going to find in that aisle,
yes.
But you're going to need something.
I like the smaller footprint of it because I'm usually in a hurry.
Yeah. All right. Well,
the grocery store wars.
Grocery store wars. Lots to talk
about
with grocery.
Read Alex's stories. You already are. I know.
Well, let's bring on Councilwoman Owens.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I am pleased to welcome Councilwoman Mika Owens. She is the chairwoman of the Climate, Environment, and Infrastructure Committee for Council. But she's one of nine, and I'm surprised we haven't had you on the podcast yet. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
We're glad to have you. I have heard you are the nicest member of City Council right now. Is that true?
I would like to say, I am pretty nice.
I'm going to have to plead the fifth. Don't get me in trouble, girl. I do love
Mika. Sherry can't play favorites, but I can.
It is. It's like you're my children.
I'll take that title.
No, it is. Honestly, in general, I do feel like we're in a period of council that is very collegial on the floor, where it is meant to be, respectful, and everyone doesn't get along all the time, but we do see like a public facing, there's niceties that in which, and I'm sure, and everybody has their, you know, closer friends, I think at this point, to each other, but I think this Burl has a fair assessment.
Well, and I'm contrasting it to when I came back to town. Mm-hmm. And we were going through the Harry Black, John Cranley battles leading up to the text messaging, up to the indictments. I mean,
at one point I had to ask Burl if I could put an expletive in the headline. I was like, it is like in the main quote of what's the story is going to be. He's like, now what?
And so that was my point of reference moving back to town in 2018. And I joke with Sherry sometimes. I'm like, when's this council going to like get a little spicy, make some news in that regard. But but you guys have been busy and you've got some causes, I would say some issues that you carry the flag for.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about those.
Well, one, thank you so much for the invitation being here. And I will say it's been a pleasant experience being on council and working with folks who are professional and we're civil and we appreciate and respect one another. And so definitely fosters, and to your point earlier, Cherry, of course, we don't always agree all of the time, but I think we are a group that is aligned on the priorities of this city. And so it makes it an environment where we can work on big things and get big things done. And so for me, of course, climate and our Green Cincinnati plan as the sustainability blueprint of Cincinnati, so important that we are leading not only this region, but the nation. You know, we've been doing this work since 2008 of how we're going to reduce carbon emissions. And it's a fascinating body of work to have held up. And so this last refresh, very excited that, you know, not only recognizing the opportunities to do so in, you know, transportation, buildings, you know, advocacy and education, but also undergirding that with the pillars of sustainability, resilience, and equity. And so when we look at the issue of climate change, understanding that it disproportionately impacts communities, it makes our job even more intentional of being able to readdress those sorts of inequities of the past.
I'm a big fan of the part of the plan that talks about tree cover.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite things, yes.
I mean, it really, there has been some emphasis on the idea of like concrete jungle and like what it looks like in the poorer neighborhoods that just aren't these tree-lined streets. And like, if you've ever been somewhere where there aren't any trees, you know there's a difference.
Exactly. It's an equity issue. You can actually be in one part of a neighborhood and it's 10 degrees hotter just as a result of tree canopy. And so, again, when we're talking about equity and being a more data-informed city and knowing where these urban heat islands exist, if we got a donation of a million trees today, we should know exactly where those trees are being planted. And so this is the type of work that not only traverses across every neighborhood and how we look at investments, but it is really the issue that impacts all of the things, housing, transportation, even workforce, the green economy. And so it is a body of work that I am truly proud of as it relates to the innovation and the vision for Cincinnati's future.
So one of the things I like to get into when we have especially elected officials on our podcast is the origin story, the background.
Yeah.
What and we already know a little bit of your background, thanks to the fact that we have on our staff, mm-hmm. our IT guy, was your karate instructor.
Yeah. Kendrick Shearer.
Oh,
shout
goodness.
Out to Kendrick.
Shout out to Kendrick.
We cannot live without him. Kendrick, my computer
goodness.
Doesn't work. Well, what's the problem? I don't know.
And full disclosure, Kendrick is a corporate level IT person who just happens to be based here.
Yeah.
And we like that because he could tell us, hey, that's not really my thing. Go to the portal, call the 888 number or whatever for support. But he is so willing to help us here,
he
even
is.
Though
we're very lucky.
He's got mm-hmm. a much bigger job than that. But he was your karate instructor.
Yeah.
So you took karate from a young age.
I knew
him a long time ago.
Yeah, 9 years old. And so it is such a fundamental part of my character and who I am today. You know, at 9 years old, I'll never forget, and you know, your parents tell you these stories when you're an older, you know, adult. And so I was someone, I guess, who was very active in school and talkative, you know, busy.
This is shocking to me.
Busy, although I am introvert. But, you know, my mom, we're walking up to North Avondale Montessori, you know, rec center one summer, and she sees a list of activities being offered. And, you know, she says to me, she looks to me and she's like, Mika, do you want to try martial arts? And, you know, even in that moment, I was just like, yes, you know, just an adventurous, I think, spirit. And so having been taught by a black woman, my sensei to this day, Terrell Davis. And so as one of the youngest and only females at the time training, you know, I grew up training with guys. And so Kendrick was one of those mentors and big brothers. And, you know, from everything from, you know, sparring, kumite, all of the disciplines of martial arts, teaching discipline and focus, and, you know, resilience and strength and mental fortitude, all of those things I learned from people like not only my sensei, but of course, Kendrick. So it's great to run into him today, a nice reunion. Yeah. Hard work.
How long so what level did you end up at?
So black belt.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have to, is that something that you just have, or do you have to like keep that up?
Well, you know, it's a lifelong kind of process and journey. And so it's something that you just continue to refine and get even more skilled at as you go along. Certainly a space where, like riding a bike, you know, you never forget, but certainly a space where I look to not only giving back to the young people that are still, you know, being mentored by my sensei and others that she's brought along, but being able to train myself. But it's one of those things that it's an ancient art, right? And you have it there, and it is mind, body, soul. And again, just the fundamental part of who I am today, it certainly, I think, has prepared me to be in this very dynamic space.
So you mentioned you started at the North Avondale Rec Center. Mm-hmm. That's where they offered the class.
Yes.
So you grew up in North Avondale?
Grew up in North Avondale.
Not every member of council is a product of this city. Mm-hmm. Do you think that, how does that affect how you lead?
Wow. I mean, my roots are here in this city. Having grown up here and not only things like studying martial arts, but, you know, having been Miss Black Teen Cincinnati, you know.
Oh, we were going to get to that because I heard that as like an aside in a community meeting, like where I think where the pageant was held, maybe.
Yeah. Yep. Taft High School. Yeah.
And then somebody had mentioned that to me and I was like, I asked you about fun facts when you were running when I was writing bios and that didn't come up. And to me, a fashion girly, I was like, that's a fun fact.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, learning to be a candidate.
But I'm sure it's more than fashion, Sherry. I mean, I'm sure there was.
What was your talent?
Well, my talent was martial arts. So, you know, so again, this kind of through line.
I would have picked her too. 10. No. 10 out of 10.
Well, thank you. I mean, this through line of, you know, what it means to invest in young people in this city. It was opportunities like martial arts and Robert Humphreys, who is, you know, a surrogate dad to me to this day, who created the Miss Black Cincinnati, Miss Black Teen Cincinnati platform. And so for young people like myself to be invested in and to understand what confidence is and to showcase talent and skills in that kind of, you know, environment, truly important to a Black girl growing up in Cincinnati and now understanding what investments mean with nonprofit organizations that are doing good things in the city. And so, again, just having my roots here, I'm like, I live, breathe Cincinnati. And that's probably a reason, you know, I think when you grow up sometimes in the city too, people ask you, have you ever left or, you know, have you ever thought about leaving? And for me growing up, I always knew that Cincinnati was just, it's home. And there's so much promise here. And I knew that my work, I had work to do here. And so I feel immensely blessed to be leading in a city where I have so much history and connection, across multiple, you know, points, flashpoints in my life, whether it be, you know, coming out of college and, you know, identifying who do you want to be in the world and starting to embrace organizations who are aligned with your personal values. And so having served on, you know, Make-A-Wish Foundation and then finding my way to the YWCA, you know, a place of not only eliminating racism, but empowering women. And so being in these spaces where I've had the opportunity to also look sometimes from the outside at women and leaders that I have admired. And I think that speaks to also who I am today and the leadership that I hope that I'm bringing to Cincinnati.
What did you study in college?
Mass communications was my major and marketing minor. And so I thought, you know, at that point I would be the CEO at Miami. Yeah, at Miami. I'd be the CEO of like ABC, NBC. You know, and life changes and you know, that marketing background also, this entrepreneurial spirit of me. And so having had, you know, a small business, running a Mary Kay business, organizational development consulting, you know, the world shapes you. But it's certainly every experience and every educational opportunity is something that creates who you are today. And so happy to have studied mass comm at Miami and great professors there too, for sure.
When did the light go on in your mind about a political career?
Yeah. Well, it certainly wasn't something that I knew early on, you know, one day I'm going to do this. I think it really is a trajectory of experiences. And so, again, having come out of Miami, and to let me also share a story with you that I think is a part of my resilience and just the way that I lead and how I think about equity and how I think about those most marginalized. You know, I raised a son in college, you know, as a sophomore, having found myself being a single mom and still a full-time student and graduating on time. I mean, literally, I, you know, had my son, took my exams a week early, came back home, had raised, you know, was with him over the summer, came back in the fall, full-time student, graduated on time, like all of the things, childcare, understanding what that meant, being a full-time student, transportation. And so then coming, you know, out of that into the world, first job, you know, all of the things, continuing my education, learning, you know, what do I want to look like in this community? What do I want to invest in? Serving on boards, at some point volunteering for campaigns and understanding, you know, there's this dynamic of if you want to see change in your community, then obviously those that you elect that are making decisions have to be reflective of your values.
And whose campaigns were you motivated to volunteer for?
Yeah. So I did spend a little bit of time, you know, watching folks like, you know, then Tracy Hunter running for judge and, you know, having been involved in, you know, Barack Obama's campaign, the first time I canvassed. I didn't know it was called canvassing, but I'll never forget that field organizer, you know, calling me up and saying, hey, you want to talk to voters in your community? I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. And also knowing what a historic moment it was. And so that translation, I think, of understanding, wow, there's more than just going to the ballot box. That is certainly important, but there's also a complete democracy infrastructure that we all have to participate in. And so having done things like that, it was 2016 that was the light bulb moment where I organized for Hillary Clinton's campaign in Walnut Hills, a place where I live, right? And so having watched great leaders in this city, you know, the name Dean Allen's of the world, the Denise Driehaus's of the world, you know, Alicia Reese as a young woman, having seen her on city council. 2016 was the moment where I realized, wow, there is an infrastructure to build here. For me, it was also walking away with democracy is fragile. And so what are you going to do about it? 2018. And so at that time, went into local government, clerk of courts, or then a clerk, AFTAP, you know, and seeing how governance looks in public spaces and how you can actually, government can help people. 2018, I think I saw so many women being elected to Congress and inspired. It was that fervent feeling of, you know, run for something if you want to see change. And so thinking about, you know, what are the things that I care about in Cincinnati as a Black woman, as a single mom, when I see smell River Park and being the mom of a Black son and understanding, you know, young people need to have things to do. We need to invest in them. When we look at gun violence, right, all of these things, housing, having been someone who experienced being on CMHA's waiting list, like these are things and understanding, wow, getting to the top of that list and like, you know, there's a lack of quality that we're looking at here. And what are the choices and options? And, oh, affordable housing. Oh, I get it. And so, again, bringing those experiences and really doing a deep dive on what is it in my authentic self with my lived experiences, what do I care about? 2020, you know, inspired to organize again, where it was, we're voting in a pandemic, a presidential election, and how do we help people navigate through that? So co-founded the Greater Cincinnati Voter Collaborative, and we brought together civic institutions and organizations to help get the message across of, you know, it is safe to vote at home. What is your drop box? What is an absentee ballot? What is the Board of Elections? And so we had a message there. But then it was also taking stock of, you know, who am I as a leader? What is my leadership style? I am a collaborator by nature. I am a results-oriented leader. And so is that something that Cincinnati needs? Can I offer value? And so I decided to take a look at that. Of course, I had support and encouragement and made the decision. And so when I think about also being a woman in this space. It's so important that we continue to build infrastructures that help women be able to embrace and come into these spaces sooner versus later. And Black women, because when we're talking about democracy and representation and decisions being made, and we're talking about equity, which is not just a word, you know, it allows us to get to better product and better governance. So a little bit of the trajectory of how I got here.
You touched on something I was going to bring up, especially you mentioned the opportunities you had in the city and how they shaped you. And you mentioned your son and having things for kids to do, mm-hmm. And Smale Park.
Yeah.
So one of the things that the city is challenged by right now is that very thing. What is there to do for the children of our city who are gathering in groups, and there are some acts of violence at Smale Park? FOP President Ken Kober has been speaking about the lack of police officers, how hard it is to get recruiting classes. There's some issues that City Council is wrestling with right now. What do you think, in particular, the City Council's role should be in specifically providing opportunities for youth and working on addressing the violent acts that have been happening?
Yeah, I think City Council plays a major role. Plays a role because how we allocate, again, resources in our budget to support organizations or even within our own ecosystem of providing opportunities for young people. And I say that thinking about organizations like Groundwork Ohio River Valley, who not only is one of our most important sustainability partners, but also hiring young people in communities to do sustainable work. And then when we're talking about a workforce of 4,000 new green jobs, trained folks by 2035, right? That is an infrastructure that we can build and support when we're looking at career pathways and being able to offer young people opportunities of, you know, police and fire, but beyond that, other areas of our city, human services, you know, parks. We absolutely have a major role to play. And even when it's not about an actual budget allocation, you know, I often say that as a person on city council, our power is also the ability to convene. And so when we look at, you know, our corporate partners and philanthropic partners and, you know, other nonprofits in this city, our school district, right, it's incumbent upon all of us to be building these infrastructures to support young people, particularly as it relates to economic opportunity.
Do you think City Council spends enough time with that?
I think we can do more. We certainly can do more. You know, as the saying goes, a budget is a moral document. And so as we look to what does equity look like? Like, what does that mean in terms of investments? What does it look like in terms of where we spend dollars for young people in our budget? Where are we leveraging those opportunities? So that's something that is certainly a priority for me.
I mean, I was just talking this morning, and it is only April, and it's not a warm April day as we record, but the Winton Hills pool has been closed for 4 years. Of all the pools to choose to close, it really was kind of a jarring thing to hear, because I had not been paying attention to 4 years in a row, but I had been paying attention to 1 year last year and thinking about what does that look like. Do you think that money is short. They're saying, as usual, a $30 million deficit. These deficits never really come to be, but it's a lot of bubble gum and duct tape at the last second to make it so it isn't. It's not like, not magic, right? It is a lot of work at the end to be like, oh, we didn't have to cut the $30 million. But do you feel like an equity is, you know, it's a buzzword at City Hall. Do you feel like enough attention is being paid to the true things that get us past the, you know, of just saying equity and doing it?
Yeah. No, we can always do more. And, you know, every day I think it is a matrix of what decisions are we making, what tough decisions are we making, and making sure that we're continuing to do the right things. And, you know, and a part of that too, in terms of like the pool, is like, we need enough lifeguards. And so what are we doing to create space for young people and being very intentional? And we're on a trajectory, I believe, this year. You know, Director Betts having, I think, a good plan of getting 24 and 24, so all the pools open. But these are the things that we have to pay attention to. We have to continue to put our the money and resources and opportunity where our mouth is. If we really want to see change in our community, and to your point, like equity is, it can be a buzzword. And so until we have truly built out the framework for us to understand this is how we spend equitably, and this is the transparency of that, that's the direction we need to go in.
Let's talk a little bit, like a major initiative of yours has been Bridge Forward. And really championing it over some opposition voices who didn't really want to upset the apple cart of, like, we have something amazing coming, the redoing of the Brent Spence Bridge, and like, we don't need another delay. And so, but that is an issue that you took on. And did you take it on with that in mind?
Yeah.
Because it was like, you know, recapturing land in a poor area of town.
Yeah. You know, we are coming into a space where, you know, we've got to talk the talk and walk the walk. And so, you know, big things are happening. I think it's a blessing to be in this moment where all of these federal dollars allowing us to do really great projects. But we have to constantly think about how are we being innovative and how are we continuing to think about the future? And it's not just this term or these 2 years, it's what decisions are we making that impact Cincinnati 10 and 20 years down the road? And so being in that frame, I think for me, allows me to come into these spaces and think, what do we need to think about here? How do we think differently? This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And so it's worth us exploring and taking time and asking questions so that we are not doing things just because it is the check the box, but we are actually having checkpoints with ourselves.
Is that done? Like, some land has been recaptured, so there had been some movement there. Is that it? Or do you feel like we'll still keep hearing about Bridge Forward and different kind of changes that are coming?
I think you'll still hear things, coming down the pike here as this kind of process, this design process is somewhat iterative in a period of time. And so the refining of such design is happening. And so what's important too in this moment, like none of us have built a bridge, right? And so not professing to be engineers, but at least if we're asking good questions for a project that is not going to happen again in our lifetime, it's us doing our due diligence. And so I think because of us having asked questions, we've gotten to a space where what could have just been, hey, here's the product, is now something that is being more thoughtful and considered along the way. So I think we'll still hear progress.
Can you see Queensgate? So Patty Newberry, one of our reporters here, has written a lot about this, and Sydney really has been writing about the West End. But the idea that Queensgate could have some sort of street grid with sidewalks and be a buildable place, is that something that you're championing and you can actually see happening?
Well, I mean, I think that's why we got to ask questions, because, again, this is about connectivity and readdressing the wrongs of highway infrastructure in the past. And so when we're talking about affordable housing and space and land use, all of these things have to be on the table. When we're talking about a convention center district and attracting people to Cincinnati to invest their, you know, money here and their time here and hang out with us and not just speed through our corridors, but to actually stop and patronize and all those things, I think these are the future opportunities. And it is about the connection. And the bridge is really, it's at the center of all of that. Yeah.
So you've been on council 3 years.
Yes.
3 years. 3 years. That whole cohort still seems like the new, you know, like they haven't really been there that long.
That's why.
So you have enough time under your belt now that you know how things work. You kind of have your rhythm. The council's kind of got its rhythm. What has been one of the surprises that you encountered that you weren't prepared for, that you didn't expect in serving on council?
Great question. Surprises. Well, this is, you know, actually, so I am surprised that I am in this role, and a role that can be so, you are accountable to, and it's demanding, and all of those things, that I am still saying I am enjoying the role that I am in, right? And so I attribute that to just, you know, decisions around wellness and, you know, making sure that, you know, there is a sense of time management in my calendar where, you know, some of my meetings, most of my meetings are the beginning of the week. And, you know, the end of the week, I keep light Fridays. And I share this with people. This is my own wellness boundary, but I don't even walk into City Hall because that's just the thing that I know I need to do to keep my work-life balance. I will go in there today to finish up, you know, our budget motion, but
because there are exceptions. There's a lot of night things.
Yeah.
Like City Council is technically a part-time job.
Yeah.
But there's 9 committee meetings. All council members aren't on all of the committees, but then also there are a lot of events that the council members have to be at, and they're at odd times.
And you know, 2-year terms don't make it easier, you know, but nonetheless.
You mean in terms of having to be
in terms of time and campaigning
almost all the time,
all the things. But I am enjoying this role for sure. And then there's also the challenge too, where, you know, it's public service and it's also politics. And so navigating to get to progress, ultimately.
What has been your biggest frustration? If there's one thing that you could just, a hurdle to get out of the way or something you didn't expect.
Let's see. This is the honest portion of your podcast. I know.
Well, you know, sometimes it's easy to maybe not look inward and look outward at everyone else to like waiting for you to make a decision about something. And then it's like, no, we are here to make decisions based on the information that we have and not being fearful of that. And so constantly being in this space of recognizing this is an enormous seat to be in, and understanding the implications of such. And so never shying away from being able to make big decisions and talk about big things like a bridge.
Like a bridge or well, there was a lot of criticism about the Israel-Gaza, whatever, yeah, all of the things that were happening there and why council was getting involved. Citizens did, they were looking for, they wanted a voice, they wanted some answer, they came. And you were the first person that was really willing to address it publicly. Was that a difficult choice to make? Because it was easier to be like, well, we'll work on it. That mm-hmm. does seem like that, that's what I tell Jack when the answer is no. Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, that was a process and a journey. It certainly wasn't anything that, you know, I woke up and said, oh, maybe I'll talk about this. Not at all. But to your point where you started, you know, it is a reminder that even global issues have a very local impact. And at the end of the day, what our residents hear, this community, how people are feeling, how people are being perceived, that is important to me. That is priority. It's important that as an elected official, we are one of my greatest roles and, you know, skills is listening. And, you know, this moment of understanding that there are people right here that are deeply impacted about what's happening over there. And
it was emotional.
Very emotional, and it's an emotional issue. And so to one, recognize that pain and what is happening and who is impacted was important for me to embrace because ultimately people want to feel heard and valued, and that is what we are here to do as leaders. And, you know, I am elected to represent all people, Black, white, gay, lesbian, straight, Jewish, Muslim, and everything in between. Those that voted for me, those that didn't. And then there's an intersectionality amongst all of them. And so when we're talking about the places where we live, where we socialize, where we interact, you know, it's pretty hard to know someone who can say on all sides, the pain and the trauma, knowing someone who may be hostage or knowing someone who said, I've lost 20 members of my family in Gaza right now. That's tough. And that is where, you know, humanizing this moment was extremely important to me. Because again, it is about this community and what people are experiencing here as a result of something happening even so far away.
I do think that it took you saying something with which not everyone agreed with to get us to the path of like 3 weeks later, something that everyone did agree with. Like if somebody didn't take the hard line and say something to begin with, then we wouldn't have been at this path to have some sort of resolution, whether it made everyone all the way happy or not. It did make everyone feel like they had been heard.
Yeah. That's important.
That's a leadership quality. I was watching a leadership quality willing to take the brave step, because things can blow back when it comes to council races. And council races don't tend to be like head-to-head races where, oh, this negative thing or that negative thing. They tend to be friendlier and more about the person who's running. They're a field race of nine. Yeah. And so then I am just, it is, I do feel like the rest of the world seems to be covering a presidential race and a prosecutor's race and a sheriff's race in 2024. But if you cover City Hall, the question at hand is who's running against Aftab Puroval? And I have heard your name bandied about. There is no person, this is never before can I remember that 1 year beforehand, the idea that there really isn't a person that is apparent to run against there, and there might be no one. There might. But is this something that you've considered?
Oh, my goodness. Running against Mark Harmer? Absolutely not. You know, I have had the pleasure of working with AFTAP since 2016. And, you know, it's an amazing partnership to continue from the county to the city. So I am happy that we get to spend this time together and doing really great things.
So let me ask it this way. So absolutely not running against Aftab Puroval, but you must be giving some thought to what the next step of your political journey looks like. Can you share that with us?
You know, I share with people that every day that I walk into City Hall, I am completely in awe at the voters entrusting me with such an enormous responsibility. I've known in my life that I have always probably considered myself a public servant. And I am also someone who values people. That is my leadership style. I hope to think that I definitely lead with my heart. And so I wake up every day thinking, if I can make an impact, I am here to do that. And so as long as the voters continue to have me in this role, I am willing to continue to serve. There's so much work to do, and what is at hand, what is at stake. You know, when I think about gun violence and continuing that work as a public health crisis, it is not just about a police response. It is about a community response. When I think about how we protect renters in this city, and the Tenants' Bill of Rights work that we're doing. When I think about how we continue to come out of this, you know, a pandemic and making sure that we are increasing our tax base and driving revenue to the city, the work, my list doesn't get shorter. And so, again, as long as the voters are willing to have me, I'm willing to serve.
That was masterfully executed that answer. I mean, I was hoping for, you know, I've got the state house in my sights, or be great to run for Congress one day, but I didn't expect that. But I have to ask. Well, before we wrap up, I'm curious, do you have anyone that you would call your mentor in politics? You have a sensei in karate.
Yeah.
Who's your political sensei?
My political sensei. I love it. Well, I've got a couple because, you know, you're a lifelong learner. But I will say that as having an organizer background, you know, Stacey Abrams and what she's done in Georgia, you know, allowing us to see that as an elected official, elevating democracy is important. And so it allows me to think about that work and how we even look at civic engagement and our own footprint at the city. And so something that I'll continue to pursue in terms of, you know, motion and, you know, how people get information, how we look at engagement, all of those things, how we, you know, how people understand how to interface with our government. Those things are extremely important to me. You know, I love a good Nancy Pelosi who, you know, just knows how to get things done in a tough space. Certainly inspired by Shirley Chisholm, having watched this wonderful Netflix documentary, or not documentary, but film, Regina King, amazing. And so for a woman, a Black woman, you know, these are women and more who inspire me. And ultimately seeing someone like Kamala Harris, you know, serving as our vice president, you know, says that, you know, you can keep going.
Do you have any
run for something?
Do you have any role in the convention coming up, or like the
no, not an official role? Yep, not an official role. But I am here to work in 2024, rolling up my sleeves and putting on my organizing boots, and, you know, getting out there and knocking on doors, all that good stuff. So important time.
All right. Well, we thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And we encroached on your buffer of having a light Friday. So we're recording on a Friday, a cloudy Friday in Cincinnati.
But a beautiful view, nonetheless.
Beautiful view. And you've brightened up our studio with your sharp pink suit and a flower.
Wait, have you always worn pink, or is this a decision you made at City Hall?
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely your signature.
You're on
now.
Brand today. Well, there's no video component to this, but you are definitely on brand today.
Yeah. So, well, you know, going back to Mary Kay and having run a business for several years, you know, my love of pink really was amplified there. But also thinking about, as you know, making the decisions of like, what colors do you pick for a campaign? I'll never forget asking a friend, and they're like, choose colors that you like. And so I'm like, okay, well, I like this, and you know, pink is great. And what also can I wear for an entire year of running as a first time candidate and not get sick of myself? So it was a little bit of that, but then also embracing the fact that, you know what, I'm a woman. I'm going to embrace that in this space where, you know, feeling seen and heard is important. But also the fact that, you know, pink is a color of healing, of love, of compassion, of actually loving oneself and loving others. And so I like to think of myself in that way. And so this flower is also a reminder, too, of, you know, the ever blossoming, growing things that need to be nurtured and watered. And that's how I see Cincinnati.
Mika, thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, as long as we're talking about on brand colors, you know, it was really my pleasure these last 2 weeks to see the sea of green in honor of Bridget Kelly, which was her signature color.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll never, ever think of green without thinking of her again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, as the amazing public servant that she was, she was someone who was certainly an encourager and supporter to me, and she certainly taught me branding, and I would tell her that I learned it from you, Bridget. So yeah. Rest in peace.
Well, Mika Owens, our council member, dressed in pink but also with a black belt.
That's right.
The 1-2 punch there. Thank you for chatting with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I always enjoy having one-on-one conversations with the council members. Now, I do call them, but everyone's so busy, so that those tend to be like, ooh, I have a call in a minute, or like, so sometimes they're freewheeling, but this was a really good conversation.
I agree. I think we It's one of the important things we do is help people understand who their leaders are. And when you are writing news stories and you're getting a quote here, a quote there, you sometimes don't get the whole picture. And it's just to have the opportunity to spend, you know, a good 30 minutes getting to know her and, you know, what drives her and, how she approaches her job, I think is important. So I'm glad she was able to spend the time with us.
You know, I do know that she has an adult son, but it is a difficult question to ask to be like, did you have a child while you were in college? And so it's not something I've ever directly asked her. Like I've kind of done the math in my head, but not really talked about that until she wanted to talk about
it. Right. And she's always been very...
And the fact that she was on a waiting list for CMHA housing, that's something I did not know either.
Right.
And so we learned a lot about her.
Refreshingly candid. Yeah. So... Well, as we record this, Sherry, it's Friday before Eclipse Day.
It is.
So everybody is looking at weather maps to see where, they might go so the cloud cover isn't ruining the total eclipse
experience. I know, but I'm thinking about becoming a meteorologist. I learned so much about watching the weather the last, 3 weeks.
And, I know you have some very elaborate plans to make sure you are in the right spot.
They are work plans.
They are definitely work plans.
Well, they're work plans and fun plans. Some of the benefits of coming downtown and being with your coworkers. Now, we're fairly loose here, but I come downtown a fair amount. I love, especially if I have to work with somebody. We have hotel desks. You can kind of sit where you want. I was on the phone talking to my best friend about what I might be doing. The photo editor was listening and she's like, great, can you help? I was like, I totally can. So we'll really talk about the eclipse next week on the podcast. By the time this posts, it will be over, but we'll kind of give you an update of how all the things went for us.
We are bracing for it
now.
But
Burl and I are eclipse chasers.
I won't say a reluctant eclipse chaser. I was going to be content with staying in Cincinnati, gambling with the fact there might be some cloud cover, taking a few moments to look out and observe it and say, that's good. But my wife, Lauren, no, we are going to load up the Jeep with provisions in case we get stuck and make a game time decision about where we're going to go just to make sure we're not covered by clouds. She is totally into it. We've had our glasses for a good month or two right now. She has been studying everything that Dean Regas says.
Yes.
In fact, we went, he hosted an event at Alt Park for people to get their telescopes out.
Wait, do you have a telescope?
No, but okay. It was fun seeing everybody rig their telescopes with various types of filters so that you can watch the eclipse safely through a telescope. Some people retrofitted their telescopes with welder's glass and others had different filters. It was just really cool. But we are studied up and ready to go. Ready to go. But we did want to talk about, you and I had the opportunity to do something fun outside of work. Yeah. It's been over there. They've been doing this forever, but I finally got around to scheduling a tour and tasting at New Riff. And I have been to a couple places in Kentucky on the Bourbon Trail, including Buffalo Trace. So I kind of thought I knew what it would be, what to expect. But this was completely different in the how laid back it was and refreshingly behind the scenes it was. It wasn't super, Buffalo Trace, for example, they have thousands of people come in every day, so they have to limit access and the tour is very scripted. But I just felt like we were hanging out with a guy and sipping some bourbon, and we went everywhere.
We did. He was an amazing tour guide. I've been kind of likening him to a cross between a beer expert and the kind of guy that you get at Disney World.
Oh, yeah. Because,
he would tee up some jokes and then we'd have to, kind of answer them. And he was just really entertaining and knew his stuff. I learned a ton about bourbon that I did not know.
He did know his stuff. One of the reasons I was interested is, it's a relatively new operation. They recently put for sale their most aged bourbon to date, which is their 8-year. And
did you get some?
I did. And we've had Ken Lewis, the founder and owner,
as a podcast guest before.
Yeah. So we've told the New Riff story, but this is the first time that I got to go behind the scenes. I invited Sherry and her husband, Alex, and my wife, and your friend.
My friend, Tom.
Your friend, Tom. And, we got to hear all about the aquifer that they draw the water from, which is right underneath the distillery. And shocking to me, because you don't get this in other bourbon trail tours, is we actually tasted the mash.
We did.
Like, we walked into the area where they do open air fermentation, which not every distiller does, which it's just like it sounds. There's no lid. Imagine a big vat of fermenting corn mash. And because of the yeast, it's just bubbling. It looks like a cauldron of lava or something like that.
It smelled like the best corn casserole you've ever tasted. It did not taste that way.
No, it wasn't supposed to have that kind of access and see how it all happens was phenomenal. So highly recommended if you're looking for something to do.
$20. You have to schedule it. Along the stop, it was like a more than an hour long tour. Along the way, you did taste the different bourbons. And then they kind of end you in, this is really what Ken Lewis had been on the podcast before, more than a year ago, because he's talked about launching this roof, this top level tasting room. And it was just this absolute gorgeous space that you wanted to stay in and relax and drink even more bourbon. And so that's open and come to fruition. And it is just, it's a lovely space. And I cannot, if you're looking to go on a date or, do something unusual, for $20 a person, it was a great experience. Just great.
So for all my friends,
and we're not being paid to sponsor this, but it was really,
there's so many, moments, great moments that you can have in Cincinnati. And for all my friends that say, you need to talk about Northern Kentucky more, I'm going to point them to this episode, because we talked about Publix coming to Northern Kentucky.
That's true.
We talked about New Riff, which is in Newport. Actually, it might be leaning towards Bellevue a little bit, but it's right in front of the party source.
So that's probably Bellevue.
Yeah. The Bellevue Newport line. Yeah. Now I'm going to get, criticized. You don't even know the difference between Bellevue and Newport.
Yeah, I cover City Hall. It's fine.
Well, anyway, that was a lot of fun. Let's wrap it up.
Okay. Thank you for listening to That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Inquirer and Cincinnati.com.
That's So Cincinnati is sponsored once again by Cincinnati.com, the online home of The Inquirer. Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by.
That's So Cincinnati was produced today by Phil Didion. Lisa Gillespie books our guests. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe on our favorite podcast platform and share us with a friend.
And finally, if you value local journalism, please consider a digital subscription to The Inquirer. Just click on subscribe at the top of Cincinnati.com. Every now and then I get a little bit terrified, and then I see the look in your eyes.